Everybody, the song should definitely rev us all up. Well, hi everyone, I'm Beauty Convretos, and welcome again, my friends, to the Ask Beauty Show. And, you know, I choose the Beatles song Help because what I want to do is really convey to everybody that whether or not we're Beatles, whether or not we are rich or poor, or black or white or Jewish or Christian or Muslim, that we all go through so many ups and downs in our lives. And the very, very best thing that we can do is not just dream and wish and hope. Of course, we can do that too, that our issues and problems are going to go away on their own. But of course, my mantra, and we have to be serious. We have to all be really serious if we're wanting to deal, you know, life's ups and downs. We need to be willing. And of course, I say this constantly to my patients in my private practice here in New York City and also in East Hampton. We have to be willing to acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can the issues that get in the way of our lives and our relationships. And of course, the number one message that I've been trying to convey for all these years, I've been hosting the Ask Beauty Show here on the Progressive Radio Network. It's now over 8 years. Really amazing where the time has gone. So we don't need to navigate all of this on our own. And if you're finding that you're on a roller coaster ride, you're just kind of going round and round and circles, the very best thing that you really can do is reach out and ask for help. And it is not a weakness, it is a strength. Because my dad, he taught me this philosophy in life. And of course, the philosophy in life was a tennis court and a sports philosophy in life, but also, you know, an off the court philosophy was really never, never, never give up. And so many people these days are going through a lot of issues. You know, I was looking at some statistics. I mean, 1/3 of Americans, according to the American Medical Association, are suffering from various degrees of depression. 40% of Americans are exhibiting signs of anxiety, suicide ideation, and suicide. The nation's suicide rate, and you really may be surprised to hear this, it actually reached historic highs prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, with rates at the highest level since World War II. And people, you know, wonder, what is this really all about? Well, we're looking, of course, at economic and social pressures have heightened the risk. Unemployment, businesses closing. You know, my husband and I, we were walking down Broadway in New York City on the Upper West Side, and you could see all the businesses over the years that have closed and businesses that may very well be closing because of the exorbitant rents. And then, of course, this is a big issue. And I hear this. I hear this with the 20-year-olds that I treat and the 50-year-olds and the 60 and 70-year-olds about the social isolation. 52% are now working from home remotely. And these people, they're feeling more anxious. More anxious and disconnected. I mean, when you think about it, you know, how much screen time connection are you really able to have, you know, with people? And people are concerned, of course, about, you know, healthcare worries, will their insurance, you know, if you're lucky enough to have insurance in this country, is it going to cover costs if I get sick? And we don't have the diversions that we once had, the socialization, the face-to-face socialization, you know, with friends. And hopefully things are really going to change and really going to open up. And, you know, as a result of all of this, I mean, this is affecting our physical well-being as well. people are eating more and exercising less and drinking more and taking more and more medications to try and ease depression and anxiety, which obviously is going to have the opposite effect. But I'd like to share good news. I mean, the reality is that we can't change our history. We cannot change anything that's happened, 60 seconds ago. But if you're finding in your life that what I call skeletons in the closet, of course, today's Halloween, so happy Halloween, everybody, if you're out and about wearing costumes and hopefully going to be safe and having a lot of fun. But, seriously, if you have skeletons in the closet and unfinished business from past relationships or even current relationships, yes, it's true. We can't change. We can't change, what has happened. But I've been practicing as a sex therapist and sex therapist now for over 35 years, and I have found that there are really successful ways to help people emotionally work through what did and didn't happen in their lives and in their relationships. And this process, it is really freeing. It is really empowering. Is it fun? No, it is not fun. But what it does is that it really frees us up to be able to live mostly in the moment, in the present, without having one foot in the past and one foot in the present. But there are things, there are a lot of things that we can do every day, but it takes a lot of self-discipline. Many things that we can do to improve our emotional, of course, as well as our physical well-being. I think that it's just too easy. It's way too easy to give up on oneself and on one's life. And there's a new learning curve that we all need to get on board and accept. For example, okay, you may say, I don't feel like exercising. I'm putting on a lot of weight, but who cares? I'm not looking for a man or I'm not looking for a woman. But the fact is that lack of physical fitness happens, my friends, to be linked to heightened risk of mental disorders and, of course, physical disorders as well. And weight training, as an example, it is a wonderful, wonderful antidote for anxiety. You know that we have weights in our bedroom and at least once or twice a day. I mean, I've been doing this for a long, long time, but if I'm feeling uptight, if I'm feeling, a little upset or anxious, what a great, great antidote to start to feel better. And of course, also to tone up your arms and your legs and your body. There was an 80-year study that says the one thing, and of course this is so true, that will make you happier and healthier, and Robert Wallinger, he's a man, I don't know whether he is still alive, he's a psychiatrist, and was directing the Harvard Study of Adult Development, one of the most comprehensive studies of emotional well-being in history. So what was the one thing that Dr. Wallinger discovered? Well, and I know you're not going to be surprised to hear this, in good relationships, it's not the bigger house, it's not the yacht, it's not all the travel. I mean, all these things are fun. It's not going to great restaurants. It's good relationships are going to keep us happier and healthier. And what the study found is that good relationships, they don't just protect our bodies, they protect our brains. And great relationships are built on trust. And building trust requires constant communication and authenticity and honesty and dependability and helplessness and showing appreciation and showing empathy and also being able to apologize. I mean, in every relationship, there are going to be ups and downs, and it's very, very easy to bail too soon. And I think that one of the primary reasons, other than the fact if you really don't care about the relationship, you're going to exit and you're not going to want to work things out. But what I found over the years, and it's not our fault, it's just that most people, most of us, really never learned the art of, yes, it is an art and it is a skill of emotional communication and, you know, and problem solving. But I have to say something too about building great relationships. And I find I say this in my presentations all the time, and I say this to patients, but we have to be very, very careful who we let into our lives. And, you know, many of you who've been listening to the show over all the years, you know that I am the author of a groundbreaking book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love. And I had done research with 450 people in the Boston, Providence, and Connecticut area. And I came up, I devised a 10-step formula teaches all of us how to assess who's right for us and wrong for us. Of course, this was a relationship kind of research project, you know, romantic relationship. But, you know, but to figure out how to assess, and I know assess is really not a very sexy word, but it's a very, very critical and important word. Assess who's right for us and wrong for us, you know, before committing to any serious relationship. It's not just romantic relationships that I'm talking about. It's friendships. It's you know, colleagues. And before I did the research, I would routinely, because I used to be this incredibly spontaneous person and just, you know, kind of responding to, you know, the vibes that I would receive from people. So typical Beatty, before she did the research, you know, and the book, would meet somebody. I'd say, oh, I just met this really lovely woman, or I met this lovely man, you know, who was just honest and trustworthy. And of course, what I've learned over the years, and it was really the book, the research that taught me this, is that I would never say anything like that today. And the best that I could say today is that I met somebody who appears to be lovely and respectful and trustworthy. And just like with my research, the research found that it takes about a year to really find out who somebody is and isn't. As you go through the four seasons, as you go through ups and downs, you find out all kinds of things about people, about their trustworthiness, about their own skeletons in the closet, about their ability and skill level when it comes to emotional communication and problem solving. And the fact is that, you know, I've found that we really cannot fast forward this process. Now, obviously, whether we're talking about romantic relationships or business relationships, if you're finding that there is even a little bit of poison or a little bit of toxicity, and for those of you who've been listening to the show, you've heard me say a little bit of poison is still poison, and we do not want to be engaging with people who are poisonous in any way at all, even though they may not be poisonous every single day. So obviously, if we're seeing a lot of dysfunction and we're seeing toxicity, we really do need to have the strength, and hopefully you're going to get the strength from friends or family or even perhaps a therapist to exit toxic relationships, because there's a reminder here for all of us. And I think this is, I don't know exactly where I found this quote, but I think it's beautiful. And it's a reminder to say no to the things, the people, and places that steal our joy. So think about it. A reminder to say no to the things, people, and places that steal our joy. So if you are looking at all of the people in your life, and I think it's important, you know, to ask yourself, you know, how are my relationships, whether it's with my partner, my spouse, my children, my family, my colleagues, to just really on a very, very regular basis. And of course, I ask you to do this every single week in my How Are You Doing segment. To really be honest with yourself, you know, are the relationships satisfying? Are they nurturing? Do they bring you joy and peace? Or do they make you crazy? Are they depressing to you? But again, we have to, honesty is just so critical, and we have to really, really be willing. And it's not easy sometimes to be honest with ourselves. And, you know, as I've said, in every relationship, there's going to be ups and downs. But if you are not in relationships with people who care enough about you and who care enough about the relationship, who are interested in wanting to acknowledge and address and resolve problems, you have to ask yourself the question, you know, what are you really doing? So getting right down to my How Are You Doing segment, you know, looking at your mental health, how are you doing? Are you generally happy with your life right now, your relationships and the general direction that you're going in? Or are you finding that your depression, your anxiety, perhaps suicidal ideation or actual, you know, suicide, serious suicide thoughts about actually doing something are taking over your life? And again, if you're on a downward spiral, the most important thing that you have to figure out, with or without help, I mean, we all need support, that is for sure, is to figure out a plan of action. What am I going to do? My depression is worsening. My anxiety is worsening. I am at a place in my life where I'm thinking that I would rather be dead than alive. I mean, these are the times in our lives where we have to be savvy. We have to be smart. We have to try to find a way to love ourselves, even if we are not feeling it at the moment, and be willing to reach out and, you know, and ask for help. You know, last night I had a Zoom therapy session with a young man who is 27 years old, and we were talking about his job and his professional life and his goals. So in my How Are You Doing segment, we're looking at a number of different issues, the mental health, the relationships, and also, you know, one's professional life. And he was saying, you know, he really loves his job and he's getting great evaluations. And I said to him, I said, Bob, I said, okay, this is all terrific, but have you asked for a raise? And he's been with this company now for a couple of years. And there was this long, long pause. We were zooming, you know, on the screen. And he said, no, he said, I don't think I feel secure enough to ask my supervisor for a raise. And I said, you know, we needed to obviously talk about that. Here he is. He's doing a great job. He's getting great evaluations. He's working for a corporate America company that has billions of dollars. And he was, you know, very, very hesitant. He said, well, I'm not exactly sure how to approach it. So we did a couple of role plays and his homework. And I routinely give my patients homework, things to do, not just to think about. I mean, obviously to think about, but then to put into action. But he was going to, because his evaluation was going to be coming up in a couple of weeks, that he was going to be willing to sit down with the supervisor and thank her very much for all of her wonderful, wonderful feedback. And then to ask for a raise. So he said, well, I don't know how much I should ask for. I said, well, you need to do some research and find out what other people, you know, around the country are making who are in your kind of position. So sometimes we all need a little nudge. We all need a little push to be able to do what is in our best interest. And of course, that is what the How Are You Doing segment is really all about, making sure that we are on a path that we are actually living our lives in ways that are in our best interest. And if you're looking at your communication and problem solving skills, so how do you rate yourself? Are you able to express the full gamut of emotions, the joy, the love, the disappointment, the anger, the fears, the scares? I mean, these are all you know, emotions that, you know, we all feel. We all feel at different times in our lives. And to be able to have the capacity to be able to have the skill, again, it is a skill. Most of us never learned any of this certainly not in school. And if we're not able to grow up in families where people were expressive, you know, the whole realm of emotions, you know, we're starting our lives off, you know, in a little bit of a deficit fashion that we need to, again, be willing to hone skills that we may not have learned. And so, again, I'm asking you, are you able to constructively express? And of course, the key is constructively express emotions, including love and fear and disappointment and anger and sadness and jealousy, and to do this well. To do this well and not stuff the feelings like, you know, so many people do. And typically there's going to be an explosion of some kind and you're going to say, well, what is this all about? I mean, I've worked with people for so many years where they've just stuffed and stuffed and stuffed for most of their lives. And invariably, it's going to affect their own lives, their relationships, and of course, their health. So what about talking about health? What about your physical health? Are you committed to doing what is in your best interest when it comes to your physical health? Have you had a complete physical, including blood work? We don't like any of this, but it's important to do within the last year. And you follow your doctor's advice and take your medications if you happen to be on medications as prescribed. And to have an exercise protocol. I know people say, well, I know I should, but I'm tired and I'm busy and I'm working too much. Well, exercise is key. It is a great antidepressant. It is a great anti-anxiety. I mean, over and above, you know, keeping our bodies in really good shape. And we should be walking or doing something physical. I mean, these days, people are at the computers morning, noon, and night, since so many people are working remote and never walk, never go anywhere, never see anybody face to face. So it's important to have this kind of self-discipline, which you can do, to walk, you know, about 30 minutes every single day. And of course, you hear about this all the time, and having a healthy and well-balanced diet. And it's very, very easy to make excuses why we cannot do things that are in our best interest. But unfortunately, we will. And it's just really a matter of time. We will suffer the consequences. And what about your sleep and your sleeping patterns? Do you have difficulty falling or staying asleep? And are you getting at least 7 or 8 hours of restful sleep, you know, most nights? And it's important to turn off the devices and the television and all of the distractions that we have, and find a way to wind down before we go to sleep. What about your sex life? Okay, whether or not you're gay or straight or bi, are you mostly satisfied with the quantity and quality of your sex life? And of course, if you do not have a partner, you can still have a very active sex life on your own. And if your sex life is not satisfying or isn't sufficient, are you able to communicate? I mean, if you're in a partnership of some kind, are you able to communicate your authentic feelings to the person who you are with? Remember that nobody is a mind reader. And you know, it's interesting. I had dinner. I was in Sarasota, Florida, visiting some friends over the past 10 days. I got back a couple of days ago to New York City. And I had dinner with a very, very close old friend of mine from Montreal. So we were going through our lives, and she was asking me about my marriage, which fortunately is amazing. And she was starting to tell me she had never married. She was a actually a single parent, raised a wonderful, wonderful young girl who's now a wonderful, wonderful young woman. And she was telling me about this relationship that she had with this doctor in Sarasota, Florida. And so she was crazy, crazy about him. And the more she talked about him, the weirder he sounded. So she said when they initially started to go out, he would not kiss her on the lips. He was not comfortable holding hands. And finally, they got to a point, and this is a true, true story, where they were going to have sex. And she hadn't had sex in a long time, probably in many, many, many years. Yes, years. And she said to me, she said, there was zero foreplay, nothing, absolutely, absolutely nothing. And now why she didn't say anything, I am not exactly sure. She said it was very painful, it was very unsatisfying, but she thought she was madly in love with this particular man. And of course, had she called me when she was starting to date this doctor, I would have given her a lot of warnings about the fact that this was not someone who, well, he certainly wasn't very stable. He certainly wasn't very thoughtful. He certainly turned out to be a terrible lover. And actually, in almost all ways, he was very unavailable emotionally, physically, and sexually. And this went on actually for 2 years. I said, Betty, really, 2 years of this? She said, well, she said, look, I've been alone for a long, long time, and I was attracted to him. And you know, she actually said she was willing to sell her house and move in with him. But again, she was not able for a 2 year period. And I don't think they ever addressed the fact that he was so inconsiderate of her sexually, well, in bed and also out of bed. But she never said anything. And then there was just a straw that broke the camel's back incident that happened. And she finally gave herself permission to exit the relationship. So what is the moral of the story? The moral of the story is, again, that we all have issues in our relationships, but we need to be willing. We need to have the skill. We need to have the trust in ourselves. We need to actually love ourselves a lot to be willing to bring out thorny issues and be willing to see whether the person or persons that we're with cares enough and is interested enough in us, in the relationship, in preserving the relationship, to be willing to acknowledge, address, and resolve whatever the issues are. So I share this story with you. And this woman, I mean, she's really smart, she's attractive, she's great. And yet for 2 years she was not able to tell this man. I mean, he was a doctor, he should have known something about biology and physiology, but obviously he didn't care to say, listen, I need some foreplay before I'm going to be able and ready to enjoy intercourse with you. So fortunately, even though it took 2 years, she was able to exit the relationship. Your goals. What are your goals? Do you have goals? Do you have clarity about your goals? And do you believe that your goals, and I think it is important, you know. In fact, I'm in a juncture in my own life where I'm asking myself the question, you know, and of course I love, you know, doing psychotherapy and sex therapy. But I'm thinking, you know, I think I want to do some more speaking because recently, for those of you who've been following this show, I did a 5-week stint did at East Hampton High School, where I was teaching students along with an amazing health teacher, Jim Stewart. My relationship education program, you know, based on the research and based on the book. And I was thinking, I was talking with my husband, Jim, and I was thinking that I would really like to explore, you know, as a new goal for the coming year, the possibility of spending a lot more time in the high schools and in the universities, because I used to do a lot of presenting and consulting in high schools and also in universities. So, you know, from time to time, I think it's really important to sit down with ourselves and sometimes just take a piece of paper and pencil and ask ourselves, you know, this is where I am right now, if we're talking career-wise or job-wise. And am I, you know, basically contented, you know, where I am, but what else would I like to do? And then map up a plan of action. And that was exactly what I started to do before the show today. I was sitting on my sofa in my office in the Upper West Side here in New York City, and I was actually Googling some of the high schools in Manhattan that I am going to be contacting. And one never knows. I mean, there may be no's, there may be interest. And yet, if we don't try, if we don't put out the effort, the results are that there is never going to be, you know, really any change. And we all know, I mean, change is difficult, and dealing with issues, you know, is always difficult. It's really, it's not fun. And yet it's our avoidance and denial, and I think laziness to some degree, and blame and self-blame and defensiveness that really do keep us in a downward spiral. It does. It takes a lot of courage to, you know, get out of our own little way, to get out of our own box and try to explore and try to see whether or not we're talking about jobs or whether we're talking about health or whether we're talking about relationships, to be able to expand our lives. And again, I remind you over and over and over and over again that we do not need to do any of this on our own, okay? And, you know, one other reminder, when we're talking about improving our lives, and I know that Dr. Gary Null talks about this constantly, you know, making sure that we are having, you know, plant-based diets and fruits and vegetables and just being really, really mindful and careful about the carbs. And I like to look around the world. I like to look at people, at countries, that are doing well, that they're doing well in terms of relationships, and that they're doing well in terms of politics and healthcare and health. And, you know, I cite the Sardinia group because people in Sardinia, they happen to live the longest. And of course, I'm always curious, so what are they doing? Well, they eat healthily, they interact, and they socialize. You see, here we go, socialize, they sleep, they take naps. You know, other things, again, the exercise, the weight training, the yoga, the meditation, if you can afford a massage, even if it's once every, you know, 6 months. Again, having supportive people in our lives and eliminating toxins, including toxic people. And that sometimes means friends and family. But I find, too, and, you know, I'd like your, you know, thoughts on this, you know, just positive visualization, just imagining yourself doing well in a work situation or in a romantic situation. It really does make a difference, because it's very, very easy these days to become so negative about everything. And dancing and listening to music, it really, you know, it can transport us into a better and more fun place. Aromatherapy, if you happen to be into that, essential oils, and helping others. And of course, this is something, I mean, I have been helping, I've helped thousands and thousands of people over the years. And in the giving, I have gotten so much. I only hope that the people that I have helped in therapy over all of these years have gotten as much out of the therapeutic experience with me as I have gotten out in terms of helping them. Smiling at people on the street, trying to connect. Of course, we have to, be careful. But, it makes such a difference, a smile, a hello. It's a beautiful day. Can I help you with the door? Today I happened to go into a grocery store, and there was an older woman who had a walker. And I kind of just rushed in the door because I was in a hurry and I wanted to get home and I wanted to review the material for the show for today. And I thought, baby, this, yeah, so it was going to take me another, what, 60 seconds. To hold the door and help her get into the store. And she was so appreciative. And I felt so great in being able to do that. Talk about a mood elevator. Some people really enjoy journaling. It's a good way of getting down your thoughts or trying to figure out what it is you are feeling. And of course, getting a dog. I mean, I've had dogs since I was a little girl, and Jim and I have a Cha-Cha, a Habichon, half Bichon, half Havanese. Talk about great company. I mean, what a supportive being who is always happy to see us. And it's also a great way to meet people and socialize. And here on the Upper West Side of New York, it seems as if almost everybody has a dog. So everybody is connecting in some way on a face-to-face basis as we have to take our dogs out, 2 or 3 times in a day. And if you're feeling, lonely and you don't have the family and you don't have the friends, support groups, real 12-step support groups, they can be wonderful as well. And remember too, I think that another thing that I'm finding is that these days people seem to be working. I mean, working because people can work morning, noon, and night, especially if you're working on the computer and you're working remote and you never go into an office. And I just think it's so important for all of us to try to find a balance between work and taking care of ourselves, making sure that we are prioritizing. If we are lucky enough to have great relationships, then we really do need to nurture them and prioritize them and not take them for granted. Because, I was going through some of my material, and there has been, and there is. There, it seems to me that I hear more and more from people about how lonely they are feeling. Really, really lonely. And, there are a lot of articles. I was looking at something in the New York Times, how loneliness is damaging our health, how there is a loneliness epidemic. And these are some of the things, and these are just reminders, and these are things that I'm sure you know, but these are, good reminders about how to try to connect, because it is the human connections that keep us feeling emotionally and also physically healthy. So there are networking groups, churches, synagogues, mosques, sports, work. If you happen to actually go to work and you see some people, engaging in social movements, volunteering. And of course, we all know about the online connections and the dating sites. And I hear horror stories from people who are on the dating sites, and yet, what's happened is that 70 to 80% of people who are meeting are actually meeting on the dating, sites. And for seniors, and there are so many of these senior living communities in Florida, and I'm sure that they are going to be expanding. around the country, at least to have that community feeling, that kibbutz feeling, like in Israel, and the communal living where people actually care about each other, is something that keeps us physically and emotionally and psychologically healthy. So these are things that are really important to remember. Because social isolation, and I was doing a little bit of research about this, is linked to depression and poor sleep and impaired immunity, which of course makes sense, increased risk of dementia. Now, I thought this was really an interesting statistic. So that social isolation, the studies have found increased risk of dementia by 50%. So what that means is that we need to be finding ways to relate and connect to real people in real time. Other studies have shown that there is an increase of stroke by 32%, and that too is linked to social isolation. And this is kind of amazing, too, when you think about it, you know, initially that coronary heart disease increased by 29%. So social isolation, it is linked to not only the depression, anxiety, the poor sleep, the impaired immunity, but increased risk of dementia and stroke and heart disease, and it significantly also increases the risk of premature death from all causes. Because when you think about it, we're social beings, and I hear from so many people, young and old, that they're lonely, and loneliness can really it can really cause a lot of serious consequences to us. So the bottom line is that strong social connections can boost a person's, and this is an interesting statistic too, lifespan by as much as 50%. So having said all of this about loneliness, if you are feeling lonely, if you are feeling disconnected, the real question is, what are you going to do about it? What is your plan of action? Because a lot of people believe, and I'm looking at an article right here from the New York Times, that the current technological revolution, the rise of digital and social media, we were told a false bill of goods, that social media would help to create deeper connections, that it would help spread democracy, that it would end loneliness. However, the reality, what we're beginning to see, is that as the digital world, and it is not going anywhere, as we all know, captures more of our imagination and time, the material world recedes and becomes less real to us. And this really has disastrous consequences. There was an article on adolescent mental health for the Times, and Matt Richtel, he's a journalist. This is what he wrote. Recent studies have shown that teenagers, and oh, I'm going to be having Andrew Solomon. Everybody knows who Andrew Solomon is. He's an author. He wrote a major New York Times series on teenage suicide and depression. He's going to be coming on the show at the end of November. Can't wait to meet him in person. I'm actually going to go to the studio on the Upper West Side, actually downtown in New York City, really midtown in New York City, and meet Andrew face to face. But the study showing that teenagers in the United States and worldwide increasingly report feeling lonely, even in a period when their internet use has exploded. Right. I mean, how connected can you really feel to all the games and all the puzzles and all the memes or memes that people are, watching on the screen? And so they are. The kids are feeling lonely, even in a period when their internet use has exploded. And, other people have said that teenagers are hanging out with friends online, but it is not the same social connection. And we need not that kind. We need to get the kids out. I mean, I remember, as a child, and not even, too many years ago, you'd be outside, you'd be playing, you would be talking to people. And now when I see some, sometimes little kids, they're on their devices. They are looking at their iPads. They are looking at their phones. It is not healthy. So I think that we have to be very mindful of the fact that, the digital reality, that there are a lot of minuses. And this is something else that was in this particular article, that the Times highlighted the emerging trend, now listen to this, of people having romantic relationships with fictional characters rather than human beings. And there's an article, and I think that I'll probably talk about this within the next couple of weeks, that seems to be a trend. Can you imagine having romantic relationships with fictional characters rather than with human beings? And I think that this is what's happened. This is what has happened with people's lack of human face-to-face connection. And there's evidence that teenagers are consuming, and I think that this is becoming more and more true, more pornography, even as fewer are having sex. And there was a piece in a journal of the Atlantic, Derek Thompson highlights the Atlantic Derek. Okay, I think that may be a newspaper. And there is a growing concern that screen habits are displacing beneficial experiences for kids, noting that compared with the early 2000s, teenagers are less likely to go out with friends, get their driver's license, or play youth sports. They are also less likely to get enough sleep. And children today, these are all results of various different studies. This is from the New York Times. Children today spend less time outdoors than in any other generation. And this is according to the National Recreation and Park Association. This is a reporting. They're devoting only 4 to 7 minutes. Can you imagine this? Devoting only 4 to 7 minutes to unstructured outdoor play per day. While spending an average of 7.5 hours a day in front of electronic media. So go figure, they are outside devoting 4 to 7 minutes a day to unstructured outdoor play while spending an average of 7.5 hours in front of electronic media. So my question is, parents, what are you going to do about this? And I know the parents will tell me, well, we can't. Well, you know what? You're parents. You can. You can certainly control the amount of time that your children are spending in front of the screen or holding their phones and playing games and doing all these crazy things that so many people are doing. And so this article goes on to say, he says, I recently realized that I can identify more apps by sight than species of trees. What a very, very sad commentary. And we're made to enjoy, physical presence of other human beings. We're made to enjoy. And this is in the article, rainstorms or sunshine or walks in the woods. We are made to enjoy touchable things. We cannot escape or overcome this need through technology, and our attempts to do so go against the grain of our deepest human needs and longings. But we do have to be, we have to be intentional. So we have to, again, this is self-discipline, this is realizing, you know, what's in our best interest and what is not in our best interest. But we have to intentionally resist the siren song. And I love the way this author put this, digitization, which by and large promises far more than it can deliver. We have to be cautious and wise about introducing devices into our lives that fundamentally change how humans have interacted since time immemorial. I mean, we can talk about all the progress that is being made by technology. And yes, it is fun to be able to just, you know, press our mouse and get into our email, but we do. We do have to be cautious and wise about how much time we are actually spending on our devices. And we have to plunge ourselves primarily into the natural world and embodied human relationships with all the complexities, channels, and inconveniences. And this author, he ends his article, which I just love, go watch the rain for 10 minutes. Go on a walk with a friend, not online, but in real life. Get off social media and meet your neighbor in person. Keep your kids offline. And that's something parents, you know, you can't do it. We're the parents, so we tell the kids what it is. You know, we're able to teach our children to at least have some sort of a balance between real life and online. Put your hands in the dirt. Play an instrument instead of a video game. Yes. Turn off your smartphone and have dinner with people around a table. How many families today sit down and have dinner together? I mean, that was the best part of the day. I'm an only child, and it was my mom and dad and me sitting around a dinner table, actually also a breakfast table in Winnipeg throughout my entire childhood. There was connection, which doesn't mean there were not ups and downs, but there was human connection and human love. So turn off your smartphone and have dinner again with people around a table. Search for beauty and goodness in the material world, and there you're going to find joy. The way back to ourselves as individuals and a society runs through old earthy things. Now, the person who wrote this article is Tish Harrison Warren, maybe a woman, is a priest in the Anglican Church in North America and the author of Prayer in the Night. Yeah, so Tish, it is a she is a woman. And I wonder, I mean, I would love to hear your reactions. I mean, here we are, and I think we are in a loneliness crisis. And I think this is another really, really important reason, you know, to get off our phones. And, you know, I notice wherever I go, and, you know, people, whether they're walking, I was walking in Riverside Park a couple of weeks ago on the Upper West Side in New York City, and I was sitting on a bench, and I was watching some young children, and they were playing basketball, and it was a beautiful day. And I was just watching these kids, they were exercising, and it was part of, you know, their phys ed, you know, during the day at school. And looking around at other people who are sitting on a bench in an absolutely, absolutely gorgeous day in New York City in Riverside Park. And what did I see? Most of the people were on their phones, were on their devices, missing out on the beauty, the physicality, reality, the sun, the children who were running around and having a really, really wonderful, wonderful experience. So, you know, as I say to my patients, but I also say this, you know, to myself, there are lessons to be learned about all of this. If we're talking about connection, if we're talking about relationships, if we're talking about depression or anxiety or a loneliness crisis, but it really comes down to what we are willing, what we are actually willing to do. Are we going to complain and moan and whine? Or are we going to sit down with ourselves or a friend or a therapist and actually look at what are the things in our life that are self-destructive, that are self-sabotaging, that are preventing us from living our lives in the best possible way? And, you know, I hadn't actually planned today to be talking about this. I had a number of SB letters from my advice columnists. You know, I'm the advice columnist with Dan's papers in the Hamptons. I have an SB column. But I think that this is really, really important, you know, to really look at how are we living our lives. And that's why my segment, are we living our lives in ways that are in our best interest, that I open every single, you know, Ask Beattie show here on the Progressive Radio Network. It's about really asking all of us to pause and honestly assess and evaluate, you know, how well or how badly we're doing. And if we're not doing so well, again, figuring out the things we need to do, not just think about, to improve the quality of our life and our relationship. And I cannot believe that there's like 2 minutes left on the Ask Beattie show here on the Progressive Radio Network. Love to hear from you. You know, you have all my contact information on my beattiecohn.com website. But I want to leave you with my two weekly messages, which I want you to really, really take in. And of course, the first message is that you need to care enough about yourself to do whatever it is that you need to do to love yourself in the best possible way, again, to live your life in ways that are really in your best interest. And of course, secondly, we all need to do a much, much, much better job in learning to love each other. It's really important. It doesn't matter whether or not we're Democrat or Republican or independent. We need to do a much better job, regardless of our political views, in finding ways to really come together and respect and love each other. So goodbye, everybody. Have a good rest of the day and a good week. And we'll talk with you next Monday. And every Monday at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on the Ask Beattie Show on the Progressive Radio Network. Take care, everybody. Bye-bye.